Can't sleep? Don't want to sleep? Afraid to sleep? Are the windows closed? Are your doors locked? Did you check your closet? And under your bed? Maybe you should keep a light on in the hallway, just in case. Now settle in. Make yourself comfortable. Lay back, close your eyes, and let me tell you a story.
The Luke in Time Mysteries begins with two private detectives. Luke, who's got a little bit of a drinking problem, and her partner Lyle, who's got a little bit of an eating problem. Together, they've got pretty big money problem. So when Marva walks into their office, offering gobs of cash, if they can find someone who's trying to kill her, they take the job without asking any question, which becomes their biggest problem, because soon enough, they walk into a trap and wind up dead. But that's not where this story ends. In fact, it's just the setup, because they go back to the moment where they first met Marva, and until Luke and Lyle can solve Marva's mystery, they keep dying over and over again. If this book sounds like something you'd enjoy, check the links in the show notes to learn more.
You can find out more about The Nine Lives of Marva DeLonghi and the Luke in Time Mysteries at jodyjsperling.com. It seems like everything these days is getting bigger and bigger. Big box stores, huge amusement parks, enormous shopping malls. Everyone wants to be the world's largest something. But at some point, the novelty of it all can become more of a problem than a convenience. Especially if you happen to forget your wallet while visiting the world's largest rest stop. Welcome to QB's.
30-minute rest stop at QB's, the driver announced as he pulled into a section of the parking lot designated for buses.
As the passengers disembarked, he warned them he was leaving in exactly 30 minutes and to remember where they were parked. I was the last one to get off.
Any recommendations on something quick to eat? I asked the driver, pausing on the steps.
He shrugged. Dunno. I ain't ever been inside.
He looked past me at the imposing structure and the people streaming in and out. There's something unnatural about it. I mean, one week that was desert scrub for as far as the eye could see, and the next there was a giant whatever it is in its place. Like someone just dropped it there from outer space.
They probably had fencing up, painted to look like the desert. The driver looked at me as if I had just called him an idiot.
People say the pulled pork sandwich is pretty good, he offered.
I nodded and stepped out onto the hot pavement and followed the crowd funneling into the nearest entrance. I was taking the bus cross-country to visit my sister, Karen, in California. She had just given birth to my first nephew and convinced me to take a break from my monotonous bookkeeping job to come out for a visit. No doubt she had plans to rope me into some babysitting, but I considered it a reasonable price to pay for a free room. And I was sincerely looking forward to meeting the little guy who shared my first name. Karen had offered to buy me a plane ticket, but I preferred the bus. If the engine failed, you were already on the ground. Zero chance of crashing into a mountain or a lake. The layover at QB's was something greatly anticipated by my fellow passengers. I had heard of the mega truck stop and was curious to check out this monument to consumerism. As I took it in from the parking lot, it reminded me of those state line casinos you see when driving from Los Angeles to Vegas. Sprawling complexes of hotels, shops, restaurants, and gambling for those who couldn't wait the extra hour to arrive at the Strip. QB's was a supersized version of those isolated resorts. It was nestled up against the interstate on one side and a state highway on the other, but I couldn't see the end of it in either direction. Around the perimeter was the parking lot, and along its outermost edge were hundreds, if not thousands, of gas pumps, fueling travelers as they came and went.
I crossed the sun-baked asphalt and funneled inside with a seemingly endless horde of travelers. The sheer scale of it was breathtaking. There were rows upon rows of merchandise, snacks, and souvenirs. Beyond that were islands of fast food vendors, and in the distance, I could make out other shops on the edge of what appeared to be a giant shopping mall. It didn't take me long to find the pulled pork station. A giant fiberglass pig sat high atop the domed roof of the QB's Sloppy Pig Sandwich Shop, though calling it a shop was an understatement. It was nearly 100 feet across, with servers spread out every yard and lines of people collecting sacks of the foil-wrapped sandwiches. It smelled amazing, so I decided to follow the driver's advice and give it a try. The line moved quickly, and I barely had a chance to examine all the menu choices before it was my turn. I asked for a number 7, which promised an overflowing amount of succulently sauced pulled pork with fresh coleslaw on top. There was no money exchanged. To improve efficiency, everything you bought anywhere in the enormous facility was paid for as you exited. I briefly wondered if people didn't just eat their sandwich before exiting to avoid paying, but that notion was dismissed when, along with my number 7, I also had a thin metal bracelet snapped around my wrist. It was like those they handed out at theme parks to verify admission. This one was about a half an inch wide and had a stainless steel finish, with some sort of QR code etched into its surface. Server scanned the code before handing me my sandwich and shouting, "Next!" I stepped aside and inspected the bracelet. "Pretty cool system," a man standing near me said, noticing my interest in the accessory. "I guess, though what stops people from just taking them off?" "Try it," he suggested. I tried to pry the bracelet off with my free hand. Unlike the ones I remembered from my childhood, it did not easily peel away. In fact, I couldn't separate it at all. "That seems excessive." "We've got thousands of people coming in and out of here every minute. It's a well-oiled machine." "I guess." "You just passing through?" "Of course. What other choice is there? It's a rest stop." "Well, for some people, it's a destination. Get in a round of golf, catch a show, relax at the water park." "There's a water park?" "I think there's 8 of them." "How long have you been here?" The man shrugged. "Hard to tell. It's like a casino in here. No night or day." I laughed, assuming he was joking. "What month is it?" he asked. "May." There was a pause before he then inquired, "What year?" Instead of answering, I smiled. "Nice to meet you." "Ralph," he said, extending a hand to shake. I automatically reached out and shook it. "Kent," I said, introducing myself. I noticed that the band around his wrist lacked the shine of my own. It seemed worn and tarnished. "Well, I have to go. My bus is leaving in 15 minutes. Nice to meet you, Ralph." The man nodded and sighed, and turned and disappeared into the crowd. I approached the seemingly endless rows of cashiers. The lines moved quickly. I could see the people in front of me getting their purchases and their bracelets scanned. Once they made their payment, the bracelet snapped loose and was deposited into a slot, likely to be recycled for another customer. I grabbed a pack of gum while I was waiting and offered it and my bracelet to the cashier when it was my turn. She scanned them both. $7.50. I reached into my pocket and my eyes widened as I realized I had left my wallet on the bus. I stuttered. "I don't have my wallet. I can just run out to my bus and get..." "Do you have your phone? You can pay by phone," the cashier droned. I reached into my back pocket, but remembered before my hand even got there that I had left my wallet and phone in my backpack on the bus. I shrugged. "Smartwatch?" she asked. I shook my head. "I promise, it'll take me just 2 minutes. I'll run out, get my wallet, and be right back." Before I could finish, she pressed a purple button on the side of her cash register, then shouted, "Collections!" A purple light flashed, and two burly men wearing sports coats with the QB's logo on the breast pocket appeared and grabbed me by my arms.
Come with us, sir.
I can pay. I just need to get my wallet.
Yes, sir. We'll sort that out in the office. This way.
They pulled me quickly and firmly away from the cashier. A few people cast inquisitive glances my way, but most ignored me and my escorts. We walked for what seemed like blocks. My bus is going to leave in a few minutes. If you take me out there, I can give you some cash and we can clear this whole thing up. They ignored my pleas. Without my wallet and phone, I was essentially stranded. I didn't even know my sister's phone number. It was programmed into my contacts. We reached a wall that held what seemed like hundreds of varieties of jerky, from beef and pork to alligator and ostrich. Sweet, hot, peppered, the choices were endless. Between the racks of dried meat was a door marked office. One of my escorts held his bracelet up to a scanner next to the door. It clicked and opened. We went inside. Like everything else I had seen so far, the office was on a scale matching the QB's claim as the world's largest rest stop. Rows of desks extended in every direction. I couldn't see the end. Each one had a worker wearing a QB's polo shirt, tapping away at a computer keyboard and staring at a screen. I was led between the rows, making turns seemingly at random, until we arrived at a desk with an empty chair positioned in front of it. "Please have a seat," the woman behind the keyboard said. The vice-like grip of my escorts relaxed, and I slid into the chair, trying to rub the circulation back into my arms. They disappeared, no doubt summoned to another code purple. "I don't really think all of this is necessary," I said. "It's just $7.50. If someone could walk me out to my bus, I can give you the cash and be on my way." She nodded as she typed away at her keyboard. "I just need to get your information." The woman fired questions at me and typed in the answers as quickly as I replied. I checked my watch. Less than 10 minutes before my bus left. "I can give you my watch. It's worth over $100. The woman, who I noticed was wearing a name tag with Sylvia printed on it, cocked an eyebrow at me. "Mr. Baxter, we have a system here. I cannot make exceptions based on your word that your wallet is just outside." "But I'm going to miss my bus." She tapped at the keyboard. "There will be another one tomorrow. But my wallet won't be on that one." "Well, we can arrange a direct debit from your bank account. Do you know your routing and account numbers?"
"Not offhand. I can call them," I suggested.
"Do you know how they confirm your identity when you call in?" I actually knew the answer to that question, as I had just ordered a new debit card before my trip. "Yes, they send a code to my phone and I..." "Oh, crap." "So, what are my options?" I asked. "My sister is expecting me in California." "Well," Sylvia said cheerfully, "we do have a work program. We essentially give you a job and you work until your debt is resolved." Sylvia tapped away at her keyboard. "I can get you an appointment with Human Resources at 8 o'clock. "What am I supposed to do until then?" I asked. "I'm afraid you'll have to remain in detention."
"Detention?"
Two more men appeared, different ones than the pair who had brought me here, and grabbed my arms. Detention reminded me of my dorm room from college. There was a bed, a desk with a phone on it, a dresser, and a private bathroom. There was even a television on the wall. I grabbed the remote and turned it on. A message on the screen asked me to scan my bracelet for access. I did so on the scanner under the screen and tuned into a movie. After a while, I realized I was getting hungry again. The phone had no numbers on it, but obviously it must connect to someone. I picked it up.
"Detention services," said a voice.
"Hi, I was wondering if I might be able to get some food."
"Of course, sir. There's a menu in your desk drawer."
I opened the drawer and pulled out a large book. It listed every food choice from every restaurant, along with all the different grocery items available. The choices were daunting. I decided to just get another pork sandwich. Can I get a number 7 from the Sloppy Pig and a Coke?
Certainly, sir. Anything else?
Do you have those little caramel candies with the cream centers?
Bullseyes?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Would you like the 3-ounce, 8-ounce, 1-pound, or 5-pound bag?
I think 3 ounces will be plenty.
Yes, sir.
I hung up the phone, and in a matter of minutes, the door opened and a man from detention services arrived with a tray holding my sandwich, drink, and candy. I settled in for a Steven Seagal marathon on the TV. The next morning, another escort arrived to take me to human resources. I was anxious to get a job assignment, pay my bill, and get out of there. My base pay, according to my HR rep, was $15 an hour. I should have my outstanding bill paid off inside of an hour, but considering taxes, I figured I'd work the whole day to make sure I was covered. I was assigned to restock the jerky wall. I didn't know they made honey mustard rattlesnake jerky. Once I finished my shift, I returned to the HR department to inquire about paying my bill and trying to catch the next bus to California. There was a new rep at the desk I had visited that morning. I gave him my information and he continued alternating between typing and reading whatever it was that appeared on his screen. "You still owe $118, he eventually informed me. "No, that's not right. It was only $7 and change. I've been working all day on the jerky wall." "Yes, I see that. Your wages have been recorded. But you have additional charges. One night in detention, movie rental, room service, uniform fee, count fees, coffee from the break room." I thought that was free. I thought all of it was free. "Who charges someone for being in jail?" I protested. "It's all part of the employment contract you signed," he calmly replied. I thought back to the scrolling text on the tablet I had signed that morning with the other rep. I thought it was just the typical boilerplate. My sister was always on me for agreeing to terms of service without reading them. How am I supposed to pay off my debt if it costs me more to stay here than I can make in a day? He shrugged. "Okay, how about if I skip the room and don't eat anything else?"
"There's a fine for sleeping in the store."
"I won't sleep," I said, determined. "If I can stay awake and not eat anything and make it through my next shift, that should catch me up, right?" The man sighed.
"Sure.
I'll see you tomorrow," I told him. "Have my discharge papers, or whatever it is I need, ready." I turned to leave, and stopped and asked, "Is there a charge for using the bathroom?"
"No, sir. The use of the facilities is complimentary."
QB's really was like a casino. No matter the hour, people came and went in droves. The smell of the sandwiches at the Sloppy Pig was tempting, but I was determined to make it through the next 24 hours without eating or sleeping. There were times when I considered making a run for it, but as I approached the exits, my bracelet started to hum. The closer I got to the door, the louder the sound became, and embedded lights started to flash. Security guards appeared and cast a warning glance my way. I could see it was night outside. 10 more hours until my next shift started. I decided to do some exploring to pass the time. Shops of various sizes, selling everything from clothing, cosmetics, electronics, sporting goods, and almost anything else you could think of, lined a corridor that stretched on for miles. It branched off at various points, creating a maze of stores. I didn't recognize any of them as the typical brands you'd find in a shopping center or outlet mall. I browsed a few of them, surprised at how many customers were doing the same. It seemed an out-of-the-way place to do your shopping, and the prices weren't that tempting. There were also myriad fast food joints and full-service restaurants. My growling stomach nearly persuaded me to get just one pretzel-wrapped hot dog, or perhaps a fruit smoothie. But the weight of the bracelet on my left wrist reminded me I had only less than half a day to endure. I figured I should make my way back to the front of the store so I didn't miss my shift. I retraced my steps, but after a while I started seeing stores that didn't look familiar. Had I made a wrong turn somewhere? I looked around for a directory or map that could guide me. There didn't seem to be any, nor any signs showing which way to the exit. Wasn't that a law or something? There was a pizza stand nearby, and I approached the teenager standing behind the cash register. "Excuse me, can you tell me which way to the front of the store?"
"The front?"
"Yes, where you come in, where you can go to leave."
"You can leave?" he asked.
"How do I get out of here?"
He shrugged.
"You gonna order?"
I shook my head and tried the clerks at a few other stores. They all seemed equally clueless as to what I was talking about, as if this was the only world they had ever known. I picked a direction and started walking briskly. My shift was starting in less than an hour now. Nothing looked familiar. I came upon a multiplex movie theater I hadn't seen before, Brazilian Steakhouse, a store that sold nothing but top hats. I started running, figuring I'd reach an edge at some point. Then all I'd have to do was walk the inside perimeter until I reached the front. But the more I pushed myself, the more my fatigue and hunger weighed me down. I paused to catch my breath at a bench. I laid down, not to sleep, just to rest my eyes for a moment. I just needed to... I woke up in what appeared to be a hospital. I wasn't in a private room, but in some kind of ward, with rows of beds lining the walls, almost every other one filled by a man or woman in an ill-fitting gown. Some slept, some watched the TVs hanging from the ceilings. I tried to sit up, but a wave of vertigo knocked me back down. A nurse approached.
"Don't try to get up. You are severely dehydrated," she said in a soothing voice.
"Am I in a hospital?"
"This is the Medi-Cue Center."
I glanced at my wrist, but my watch was gone.
"What time is it?"
"Don't worry about that. Just try to get some sleep."
"I can't. I'll be late for my shift."
She smiled.
"Your HR rep was by earlier to check in on you. She'll take care of everything."
I had a feeling I knew what that meant. "How much is all this costing me?"
"Oh, we have a great medical plan here," she replied cheerfully. "You're only responsible for half of the bill." After the first year, I gave up trying to reach my sister. I had been reliant on my phone and computer to manage all of my passwords and contacts. Computer access was extremely expensive, and buying a new phone was even more so. The only way out was to chip away at my debt until I could gain my freedom. I wondered what Karen and my friends at work thought had become of me. After 5 years, I worked my way up to supervisor and got a substantial pay bump. My debt was finally decreasing, but what I had accumulated that first year seemed insurmountable. To be honest, life at QB's wasn't that bad. I found a cheap, comfortable room and made some good friends. Around the end of my 8th year, I met Sally. Sally had been working at QB's since she was a teenager, lured by the promise of a lifetime job. She had grown up on a farm. Her family would go into the city once a month for a big shopping trip. It was such a treat for her. When she discovered the seemingly endless stores inside the rest stop, staying wasn't something she thought twice about. We started dating. At first, we'd just walk through the hallways, grab some fast food, and just talk. Eventually, she expressed her desire to go to a nice restaurant, take in one of the big theatrical shows, spend a day at the water park, all things well outside my budget. I explained my situation, and she offered to pay my way. Sally had long ago decided that she never wanted to leave QB's, so accumulating debt wasn't an issue for her. She didn't even know how much she owed. One day, I decided to see if I could find the end of the mall. I walked for half a day in one direction. I figured I had traversed over 20 miles, but never was the end in sight, and never was there any lack of people to fill the stores and restaurants. I did discover other entrances. Curiously, I noted that at some of them, people dressed differently. It was like it was summer on one side of the store and winter at another. One of Sally's friends had a theory that there was only one Cubies, but they used some sort of dimensional shenanigans so that the entrances were in different places, even different states. I didn't laugh at that idea. It must have been close to my 20-year anniversary of working at Cubies and my 9-year anniversary married to Sally that I met him, my nephew. Now, I can't be absolutely sure. I had only seen pictures of him as a baby, but I knew his name, Kent Jacobian. My sister had named him after me. Well, she always insisted she named him after our uncle, who I was named after, but it was the same thing. And her married name was Jacobian. I always thought it was an unusual name. She and her husband were the only Jacobians I had ever met or even heard of. And there he was, standing in line at Cubies. One of the cashiers had taken ill, and I stepped in to cover the register while the call went out for anyone eager to pick up some overtime. He had bought himself a pulled pork sandwich at the Sloppy Pig, a bag of Funyuns, and a can of cold brew cappuccino. When he reached into his pocket for his wallet, I recognized that look of shock, embarrassment, and fear from finding an empty pocket. "Darn," he said, smiling. "I left my wallet in my car. Is it okay if I just run out and get it?" he asked. I started to reach for the purple button when he noticed my name tag. "Oh, hey, you're a Kent too," he said excitedly, extending his hand. "I'm Kent Jacobian, named after my uncle. Well, great-uncle, according to my mom. I never met either one of them." "Kent Jacobian?" I asked, as I shook his outstretched hand. "Yeah. Where are you from, Kent?" "California. I'm headed back to college. I always pass this place on the way and finally decided to stop in and see what all the fuss was about. It's kind of cool. A guy could live here," he remarked. "You'd probably get bored after a week," I said. "So, is it okay if I just run out and..." I reached for his wrist, pressed my bracelet against his for a moment. It beeped, then released its grasp on him and his future. "It's on me, kid. One Kent to another." He looked at the flat bracelet lying on the counter, then back at me. "Thanks." He started to walk away, but then turned back. "Seriously, I just need to grab my wallet and I can pay you back. It's all right, really. Good luck at school. And don't forget to tell your mother you love her." He laughed. "That's what my dad always says." "Thanks for shopping at Cubies," I said, as he headed for the exit. I left off the part that went, "Hope you come back soon." Thank you for listening to Welcome to Cubies, written especially for the Bedtime Stories for Insomniac's Fiction Podcast by Rich Hosek. Please remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Rate us on Apple, Spotify, and Audible. And share these stories, as well as the unabridged audiobook versions of my novels, with anyone you know who enjoys audio fiction. Be sure to visit bedtimestories.studio, where you can sign up for our Insomniacs Snoozeletter to be notified of new episodes and exclusive offers, and get a free bookmark. You can visit richhosek.com to learn more about the host of Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs. Thanks again, and all the very best.